We're going to talk about funk music and how funk became the celebratory music, why it's known as the free man's music. How does harmony in music tell us how to feel, and how does rhythm give us a path forward? We're going to be talking about musical concepts, more into Joseph's relationship with Victor Wooten and the rest of his brothers, and the Steve Miller Band. It's all coming up right here on Funktastic Chats.
Hey, this is Joseph Wooten, and I am on Funktastic Chats with Mike Zabrin.
Music, culture, rhythm, and respect. If you joined us last time, then you know that Joseph says the most important thing that you can learn from music is that in music, rhythm creates a relationship with things that are normally not compatible. Rhythm gives two different ideas a path forward because rhythm makes them respect each other's space. And Joseph says that if you replace rhythm with respect off the stage, it'll do the same thing. Welcome to Funktastic Chats. I'm your host, Mike Zabrin. This is part two with Joseph Wooten, music, culture, rhythm, and respect.
Amazing Grace was written from the pentatonic scale. Allegedly, it was written by the slave ship captain from what he heard coming from the belly of the ship. And initially, I forgot to mention this last time, Amazing Grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. The initial Negro spirituals used the pentatonic scale. Every time I feel the spirit moving in my heart, I will pray. Like Amazing Grace, I did in And what a friend we have in Jesus, right? Mm-hmm. Initially, I heard that that used to be called the slave scale, right? That was naturally what they came over singing. And like I mentioned before, singing gives you connection to life as it should be, right? And because it does, it can give you endurance through hard times. It enabled largely Black people to endure the horrors of the 246 years of slavery, right? So eventually, right, that's the scale that most of the songs are built off. Somewhere in there, somehow, a note got added, right?
A blue note.
Yeah. A blue note. That's a different feel. Right? That's a different expression from from there, the Negro spiritual gives way to gospel and the blues. And music is always cultural. It always represents something cultural. So by the time you get to the blues, now you're making joy from your misery, right? Like the famous B.B. King line, nobody loves me but my mother, and she might be jiving too, right?
Yeah.
Nobody loves me but my mother, and she might be jiving too, which is tragedy turned into beauty, right? It's so tragic that you turn it into beauty because, again, music is life. We recognize music is life as it should be, right? Well, somewhere in there from the Negro spiritual, the gospel, to the blues, they started adding more rhythm and boogie woogie, right? And boogie woogie fuses with gospel. Now we got rock and roll, right? To me, rock and roll is kind of where the Negro spiritual is getting you through the tough times, where gospel is accessing that spirituality, you know, where blues and boogie woogie starts to make you dance even in your misery, right? In comes rock and roll, which is like rebellion. It's rebellion against, right? Literally, it's turning the guitar up so loud that now the amp distorts. Old people, it's too loud for you. I don't really care, right? Because we really dig right. it. And it's moving people. You're angry, but the dance floor is full. That's rock and roll. And it was literally the music of rebellion. But in its roots are all those components still. The struggle of Negro spirituals, the struggle of gospel, the rejoicing through the pain of blues, to the dancing of boogie woogie, right? But then funk comes along. And funk is the first music, in my opinion, it's a free man's music. Funk is a free man's music. It's not talking about cornfields and getting beat by a master. It's talking about, thank you for letting me be myself. It's talking about, I'm super bad. I break out in a cold sweat. Because, you know, because not because of pain, but because of my exalting. It's making, I don't want nobody to give me nothing. Open up the door, I'll get it myself. And if you think about it, even if you've ever picked up a bass and you pull out your thumb and you hit that open E string, you'll stand up straighter, right? It's not, it's because it's a free man's music. It's a, you know, you'll look at the world, you'll poke your lips out, and you'll do this thing because it's not about the struggle. It's about the triumph that comes after the struggle, right? You think about funk tunes. Thank you for letting me be. Come along and ride on the fantastic voyage to the land of funk, right? Funk is a celebratory music, but it's the music that's rhythm based. Like, again, I talked about it before. Music is rhythm, harmony, and melody. Rhythm, like harmony is the thing that tells you how to feel, right? Like, we recognize as happy. You know, minor, we recognize as sadder. Harmony tells you how to feel. Melody puts an identifier on it, right? So this, if I go do da 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 da. After that, I can go, hey Mike, you remember that song? Da 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 da. It's the identifier. It's the license plate on the car. But rhythm is the thing that gives you a path forward. Rhythm inspires action. And that's why, in my opinion, rhythm of the three, it's the most important one because it's the thing that gives us a path forward. And that's what James Brown knew. James Brown would say, tell all of his bandmates, everybody's carrying a drum. Like there's that famous scene, what do you have in your hand, son? It's a trumpet, Mr. Brown. No, no, that ain't right. No, no, that ain't right. What's in your hand, son? It's a guitar, Mr. Brown. No, no, that ain't right. That ain't right. And then finally somebody says, it's a drum, Mr. Brown. That's right. You're all carrying drums. Because wow. He recognized that rhythm, that with rhythm and the funk and the music created from it, he knew that he could change the conditions of his people. Literally. Literally. That's what James Brown was doing, the funk. He and Bobby Bird, it was so sacred to them. They would oftentimes talk to each other, they'd be whispering, right? And if somebody came in that they didn't think needed to be in the conversation, they stopped talking to the person left because they knew the tool that they had, they knew the power of the tool that they had, and they knew the plan that they had to elevate their people. James Brown wasn't a perfect man, but that's a powerful tool. So when Martin Luther King gets shot and there's riots all across the country, in the city, the first city they should have had a riot was Boston. And James Brown stopped the riot in Boston with his concert. He stopped them from rioting with the funk, right? And that's partly why he became so dangerous on the radar of J. Edgar Hoover, who didn't want another black messiah, as like a man who could stop a riot can start one, right? So, but James's plan was, with the funk, he had two bands. One band would play here while the other band traveled. And he played every night, 335 dates out of the year. 335 out of 365 days. And he would take the jet between the two. And he would, he was like Floyd Mayweather with his money before Floyd. He was the promoter. He'd pay a promoter a little bit of money, a little college dude that wouldn't take much so that he could make all this money. And his plan was to buy radio stations all across the country so black people could be played on their own radio stations because they couldn't get on white radio without being a quote unquote crossover. But the moral to my story is funk music is the one that spurs us to action because that's what rhythm does. Rhythm is a plan for harmony. Like rhythm goes. Oops. Right? Rhythm gives a plan for those feelings. Right? And it also gives you a plan. It shows you that it's not enough just how you feel. How you feel has to have a plan. And rhythm inspires you to action, to meaningful action, right? It's the thing that makes you dance. And it's, again, it's a free man's music. It's not slave music, right? Say it loud, I'm black and I'm proud. And right. It's everybody's music. It's not just for black people, it comes from black people, but it's for everybody. Freedom is for everybody, right? Dancing is for everybody.
Yeah, that's such a cool story. I mean, and especially when you're talking about all those rock and roll influences and things you hear within rock music and stuff like that. I wonder if that's a big part of what has kept Steve Miller Band so current over the years.
Well,
you know,
yes,
it's all these different influences that he
Well,
used.
Steve Miller, in his, he's fueled by the blues. He's a blues encyclopedia. You know, that's what he was raised on. T-Bone Walker. His dad was T-Bone Walker's doctor.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he said T-Bone Walker came to his house and he said he'll never forget it. He showed up in a flesh-toned Cadillac with leopard skin seats. And he taught Steve how to do play behind his head while doing the splits.
Right? Oh, my God.
And that's what he grew up in. Steve Miller's godfather is Les Paul.
Really?
His godfather's wow. Les Paul. So when he was young, Steve learned about owning your own music and owning your own ideas and owning your own stuff. So where other blues men were willing to give it all away if they gave you a stack of cash and a Cadillac, Steve was like, nope, here's my number. You know what I mean? If you want to talk, we can talk, but I'm not giving it all away. I'm going to own it. And he was one of the first ones. They still, in college business classes, they still look at Steve Miller's contract with Capitol Records as Exhibit A.
I know he recorded a record in like 2011. Do you find yourself contributing from a creative standpoint too, beyond just playing the parts, or is it mostly?
No, most of my contribution, because most of his money is still being made off of his old catalog. So my thing now is just to make his stuff sound as good as possible. Because most of the Steve Miller stuff, aside from Abracadabra and Fly Like an Eagle, not very much of it has a lot of keyboards in it. Mm. So my thing is to add to it without changing it into something else. Right. So that's my thing now. And like my function in the Steve Miller Band, I know what everybody sings. Steve doesn't always have a ton of patience when we're learning new things. Right. So if he brings another song requires harmony, then I'm sort of the guy to go, okay, you sing this note. I'll double Steve, you take the note up, or I'll take the note up, you double Steve, you go down. And then I sort of take care of the vocals, who sings what, along with the drummer, keep track of the arrangements, and just to try to keep him feeling comfortable. Because that's what a side man does, makes the front man feel comfortable.
How does that compare to when you're working on Victor's records? It makes sense, but I didn't know you were on so many of Victor's records that I grew up listening to.
That's a good question. It's a different requirement playing with Victor. It's similar, but it's a different requirement. With Victor, it's a true rhythm section, right? Because we grew up playing in a rhythm section. So keyboards, bass, drums, guitar take up the same amount of space, and we use our musicality not to step on each other. But the Steve Miller Band, they're a guitar band that has a keyboard in it, right? So my responsibility, I mean, as I see it, is to add to it, but not get in the way of his voice and his guitar. Because over the years, it's been, 28 years now. Over the years, I know that Steve doesn't like to hear, like, piano. It's easy for piano to be in the way of his voice, frequency-wise. So I keep my keyboard parts out of the way of his guitar parts, out of the way of his vocal. But with Victor, okay, see you, Steph. With Victor, Victor's game for my creativity, right? With Steve, I'm trying not to betray the songs that people have been listening to for darn near 50 years, 40 years, whatever it is. And with Victor, he's looking for that creativity. If I want to stretch a chord, he'll let me stretch it. And if something's not right, he'll say. So that's the difference. With Victor, you're jumping into a big bowl of creativity. And yeah, with Steve, you're looking to be just to make his music as good as you can make it for him. Yeah, for him. That's
a hard lesson for a musician coming up to learn, I feel like. Is like, how do you be the best to make everybody else sound good, right? I mean, that's, at least from my experience teaching students, I mean, that's something that mm-hmm. I always try and teach them, you know?
Well, here's a good thing. Here's a good head start for musicians that are playing behind somebody else. The question to ask is, how is what I'm doing making the feature better, right? So with Steve, yeah, we're playing abracadabra. There's a bunch of substitutions that I could play, right? There's a lot of things that I could do. But as a sideman, my thing is not to take the attention and put it on me, right? If I do something cool and they're not looking at Steve, they're looking at me, that's not my job, right?
Yeah.
The thing is to remember why you're on the stage, right? If there's a soloist, as a keyboardist, my thing is to make sure the soloist sounds as good as possible. So if I do a substitution, I want to make sure that the soloist can keep playing what they play without me changing the roadmap, right? I'm just trying to, on some of it, maybe change the curtains in the same room. But I don't want to change the room to a point that they can't play on it.
Yeah.
And I don't want to do it in a way that's going to take the attention off of the soloist. So the question is always, how do I make the front man, how do I make the feature, how do I put the feature in its best light, his or her best light? That's what a side man does. Like Victor says, you know, his favorite thing that he does is just playing bass. And if a bass player is doing it right, you forget about him, right? Mm-hmm. But if you're looking at, if the singer's singing and you can't take your eyes off the bass player, that's not what you're there for.
I feel like that's such a crazy responsibility of a bass player like Victor Wooten, because somebody who can do just like, you know, is just so innovative on the bass. I mean, mm-hmm. to be able to hold the rhythm is
that is the best kept secret of Victor, is that he's just a really good bass part player. I mean, he's really good. He knows what the vocalist is doing. His feel is good. Note choices are good. And he doesn't take the attention off of the person in front. Like if you if you need a bass player on a thing, not just a soloist, but somebody who's going to play bass parts, that's the part of Victor that people know the least, that he's just the absolute best at.
I think it's awesome that you're able to manage your schedule like that, to play with the Wooten Brothers and then, you know, the Steve Miller Band.
One thing that COVID did was open my schedule up. That's the one thing it did. But the other thing that COVID did was it enabled me to do more study and to sort of like be more introspective, find to take a look at who I am more in depth and where I want to go and how I impact other people and the things I want to learn and the things that I want to do to change things for the better require historical context, study, knowledge of current events. That's sort of what I've been doing. And then I've been playing too. And if you focus more on the musician, then the musician will influence the music.
Seems like a lot of musicians too have been using this opportunity to really get their digital online presence where it should be in today's day and age, where everything is just so digital. Mm-hmm. You know, I hear a lot of that too.
But you know, but the thing is if you get your digital presence where you want it, but it's at the expense of your presence, it's at the expense of who you are, or your knowledge of who you are, or even more importantly, your knowledge of how who you are impacts other people, then that online presence can be compromised. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like fame. If you don't know who you are, fame can be very destructive. If you don't know who you are, if you don't have balance, again, if you don't have balance and you're walking on the ground, you fall, oh man, I skinned my knee, right? But if you're 10 feet up and you don't have balance, you fall. If you're 20 feet up, 30 feet up, right? The more you rise literally and figuratively, the more important it is to be balanced.
Do you feel like you knew who you were when you first started getting all this recognition? People were knowing your name and all that stuff.
That's a good question. But see, what was different with how we came up? Normally a young musician, like a good example, Neil Sean, right, plays guitar with Journey. Neil was playing with Santana when he was 15. He was a kid, right? Well, you know, there's no adults around except, you know, the hippie 60s. They're snorting cocaine and, you know, doing the whole thing. So it was he was led by example to do some of the wrong things along with all of those right things that we saw him do. Well, when we were growing up and we were young, our parents went to everywhere that we went and we were inspired by each other. So we were in nightclubs when we were in elementary school. Like Victor was in, we opened for War when Victor was literally 5 years old. He was five, I was eight. We opened for Curtis Mayfield 2 years later. Victor was seven, I was 10. We were children, but our parents were there. So when we'd see other people get drunk, and we were like, we'll never do that because we're playing music. We don't want anything to compromise our music. So, and my mom was making sure that we turned out to be the right kind of people. So we didn't have those. We had the desire to be the right kind of people and good musicians because our parents made sure that we did. And not all young musicians have that opportunity.
What are conversations like between you guys? Do you guys always talk about music, or is it like, how often do you guys talk? Like, I'm just so interested in the family dynamic.
Here's the interesting thing. Like, we go long periods of time. I say long periods. I mean, sometimes it's days, sometimes it's weeks, you know, without talking to each other. But oftentimes when we get together, we talk for a long time. Like if I call Roy, I'm probably not going to be off the phone in an hour. Because it was like that when I used to call my mom. When my mom was still alive, I'd call and seldom did I talk to her for less than 3 hours. Yeah. That's sort of the way it is. We're really close And we're really, all the brothers are close, but it doesn't require us talking to each other all the time to retain that closeness.
It was funny watching this interview of you on YouTube. A woman asked you, what is one question that annoys you that people ask you? And you were like, I don't know, you were like, well, I hate when people ask me if we fight a lot.
Yeah.
we never fought.
Yeah, that's not annoying, but it's the closest thing to annoying is when they don't believe you when you give them the answer. Like, yeah. People don't believe that we didn't fight, and we didn't. One, we weren't allowed to, and two, we didn't want to, because we were all inspiring each other. The other one you get is, were you guys competitive? We weren't competitive because we didn't all play the same instrument, right? I didn't have to chase Victor's bass playing because I was playing keyboards. I didn't have to chase Reggie's guitar playing because I'm, you know, but Reggie was so good so fast, it inspired me to practice, because in my head, my older three brothers were so far ahead of me. And my younger brother, Chu, he felt ahead of me also. And I didn't want to be the one that kept the band from being able to play whatever the song was because I hadn't been practicing or because I was lagging behind. So we inspired each other. When I say that we weren't competitive, that's not with each other. We weren't competitive at all on instruments. Now, if we played a game, yeah, of course we were competitive. I mean, there was a foosball game we used to play, and my brother Rudy was really good at it. It's miniature foosball. And he'd get on a roll. We used to play, we used to call win by two. Like, you could win 2-0, 3-1, 4-2. As soon as you got ahead by two, it was over. And Rudy, like, he's playing, plop, and he'd score on you. Plop, he'd score again. And he wouldn't even look up. He'd just go, next. like, cut you to your core.
Rudy played saxophone, right? Rudy was the saxophone.
He played two saxophones at the same time.
Oh, right, 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 yeah.
When he was in high school, he won the Jazz Soloist Award 2 years in a row. But as a senior, he won it blowing two saxophones at the same time. In high school.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah, it was something else.
Crazy. Oh my God. Man, this was so inspiring. I really appreciate it, man.
I appreciate the opportunity also. I know I'm talking your ear off, but...
No, I love it. I just wanted to be respectful of your time, man, because...
No, it's quite all right.
Okay.
I have all day today. And but I tell people that I'm a talker, because that's my initials, J-A-W, Joseph Allen Wooten. And I share a birthday with the Bill of Rights and the First Amendment.
That's right. And you're B positive.
And my blood type is B positive. That's how much of an optimist I am. Going on the 170th anniversary of the Bill of Rights. I thought that was so cool. When I was a kid, I used to not hate it, but I used to wish I was born on Beethoven's birthday, because he's either the 14th or the 16th. They're not sure. And I was on the 15th. And then I was doing a First Amendment gig, and they had a quote on the wall on December 15th, 1991. And I was like, you know, what is that? And it was the 200th anniversary of the Bill of Rights. I was like, oh, okay. I was born on Bill of Rights Day. 1961, 170 years later, so.
You and Victor, what are each of your interests that people just wouldn't know other than music? Like, is there
Victor
a weird...
Victor likes magic. Victor's
What'd you
a
say?
Really good magician.
Magic? Really?
He's a good magician. Like, on the Soul Circus tour, he used to levitate. He made... You remember MC Divinity?
Yeah.
He made Divinity disappear on the show. She would disappear every night. He'd levitate, and he'd have the levitating bass. And, you know, he used to do the... He'd be playing the bass, and he'd lean way over the crowd like Michael Jackson in the Smooth Criminal video. People like wondering how he did it. He's leaning over, just doing this thing. Victor's a magician, pretty darn good gymnast too. That people didn't know that. Self-taught gymnast. And I think people do know that he loves nature.
Yeah. Well, he's got the camp and everything.
All that stuff. He can get down and, you know, get down on the ground and look at tracks and do all that thing.
Oh, really?
Absolutely. One of his best friends is a tracker. So that's the Bass Nature Camp. It was initially a Bass Nature Camp. Now it's a music camp. But they would come and learn about music and nature because they use the same instincts.
What about you? What's something about you that
people don't know? Well, the older I get, the more I'm into history. I'm a historian, but I'm also a self-taught nutritionist. Yeah, a lot of people don't know that.
But you look like it, though.
Well,
you low-key look like you're like 35, man. I'm not even just saying that to like.
Oh,
I'm just
man, like, I appreciate it.
I'm sitting here like.
I appreciate it, man. That makes me feel good. I'll be 60 in December.
Are you serious?
I'll be 60.
Oh my god,
1961,
crazy.
Right?
What, man? Yeah. I'm 29 and I'm up here just like.
Oh, it's so. As long as you feel good and you're not hurting nobody, man.
That's right.
There's room enough for everybody. But here's a cool thing. I also I love numbers. Not math so much. I just like numbers and the character of numbers. So I keep track of how many days old I am. And I found out that, so I am 1,001 days older than Victor, 1,001. So that means when I got to my 19,000th day, that meant the next day Victor was going to be getting to his 18,000th day. Now what that does, so calendars are one day off depending on how you count. Like if you count today, the day you're in as one, you know, that'll be one thing. If you don't count that day until after the 24 hours, you'll have one day less. So I was looking and I will reach my 15,500th day. Not counting the day that I'm in, on my dad's 91st birthday. Which means that Victor, if he counts that day that he's in, will be on that same day, both on my dad's 91st birthday. It happened also, I think, on our 19,000th and 18,000th day, was on Victor's son's birthday. Victor's son, Cameron, which that year was winter solstice, which eventually became my wife and I's anniversary.
Dude, everything is just one big
circle.
Everything's related.
Every now and then you just get some reminders that things aren't just random.
What was that thing about space you were saying and how it relates to numbers? Or, you know what I'm talking about?
Nothing is everything. So there's a commercial that uses the phrase, nothing is everything. And I'm like, somebody saw my TED Talk. Because that was like, nothing is everything, why it all matters, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But what it's about is if the planet revolves, right? And it's stable at this axis, stable at this axis. This axis is 100% latitude, 0% longitude. And that piqued my interest. I'm like, how could nothing be everything, right? How could 0 and 100% be identical? This axis is 100% longitude, 0% latitude. Again, where 0 and 100% are literally the same thing. That's math telling me that. I didn't make that up. And where those two points meet, where those two points meet is a place that's literally nowhere and everywhere, right? And at that moment, like when we were young and my mom, cause she was religious, she would say, God is everywhere. And I believed it because she said it. I could not wrap my head around it. Something being everywhere at the same time. But if this point is literally 0 and 100%, that makes sense. And if you start following that out, it makes sense because every number starts with 0. And 0 makes every number possible. In the same way, on the globe, the reason you want to be centered, like even in meditation, they always talk about being centered. The reason you want to be in the center, because in the circle of life, only the center is connected to every point. That's why you want to be centered. So that just sort of, that sort of opened my mind up, because everywhere there's a number, there's a zero making it possible. Every number is preceded by zero. And the fact that it's a finite number, what does that mean? That means that number is going to come to an end. When it comes to an end, where does it go? Back to zero. So the truthfully, when they talk about the alpha and the omega, that makes sense to me, right? Start from nothing, have your existence, go back to nothing. What keeps life from being a pile of creation with no room to move? Space in between, right? So space in between the creations give us opportunity, right? And it's the zero, it's that place where nothing is everything in the center of even this globe that holds it all together. So zero takes care of us. It holds us all together, gives us room to operate, gives us opportunity, gives us stability. Now, if love is taking care of somebody, caring for somebody and taking care of them, it sure seems like that zero loves us. Because, you know what I mean? We can have this conversation because we're stable and because we have room to operate. And even sound, what is sound? Sound is a wave that goes above and below zero at a certain speed. It's zero that makes it possible, right?
Yeah.
You know, that's what makes tone. That's what makes it, when it goes faster, it's what makes light. It goes faster. It's what makes feeling. Now, here's the crazy thing, and then I'll let you go. But the, at Victor's place, I don't remember the person. And I, ironically, I think he plays maybe bass with Weird Al or something. But if you take notes that are harmonious, hypothetically F and A or something, and you slow them down, there's a certain number of octaves to where you can actually hear the frequency. You know, you hear it as rhythm. Those two frequencies make a beat. So if you think about what that means, rhythm is just harmony that you can feel.
Wow.
Literally. Literally. So it's anytime when you're making music, when you're speaking, when you're doing anything, you're just letting other people feel what's in the space. What's in that zero that's everywhere that we go, right? Like zero needs expression. That's what one is. One is just expression of zero. And two is just another whole number, which means it's just another one. We know off of the computer, it's just zeros and ones. Everything comes out of a computer is zero and one. That's literal and that's figurative. And if you delve into that, you can go right down the rabbit hole.
Even with your own original music, I think that's honestly what kept me listening to it for so many years. It's also the things that you don't say. It's also the spaces. You know, there's purposely, I can't remember the song off the top of my head, but there's like, I mean, the multiple songs, you hear like these 2 seconds of space, right? Mm-hmm. Near the beginning, near the end, you know?
Because truthfully, that's what we're studying. When we study when a person says the meaning of life, they're trying to figure out what is this essence that we can feel that we can't touch, right? I can make you feel it, but you can't put your hand on love. You just know it because you felt it, right? You can't put if you try to explain why this song is better than that song or why this one's your favorite, it'll make sense to somebody else who feels it too. You know what I mean? But if you don't feel it, right? And what makes music so powerful is you can make a person feel and experience the important part of life. Because life is an experience. It's the essence of being alive or being conscious that you're conscious. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it takes throwing some confetti into the wind in different ways for us to experience the beauty of the wind, or at least be able to convey that beauty to somebody else, right? You have music in your head right now, but if you want to share it with me, you got to throw some notes in that musical wind to share it with me. And then once I share it, you can just go, da, 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 and I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's the goal is to continue making music, which is finding a path forward for things that are different, or people that are different, or ideas that are different, or politics that are different, or religions that are different. Once we step off the instrument, to continue making music, we do it here with harmony and rhythm, especially. Rhythm gives us a path forward. If we can remember that respect is cultural rhythm. If you respect somebody and that person receive, if you make sure that they receive that respect, it gives you a potential path forward. And even if you don't have a path forward, you're not going to hurt each other. Like music. If you don't like my song, it didn't hurt you. It didn't disrespect you. It just wasn't your thing.
And if you don't respect somebody, then you're just trying to convince them about your point compared to
The next time I'm talking to musicians, I am going to have them play all at the same time, right? Just play all at the same time. And then I'm going to have them maybe let the drummer start and then play on the beat with the drummer, not even in any particular key. But as soon as you line up with the drummer, it ceases to just be noise at that point, right? And then you can refine it to keys. And now the same stuff that was making noise before, a cacophony, I'm sorry, the thing that was making a cacophony of noise before is now making music. Well, it's the same thing. What's the difference between an argument and a conversation? In an argument, you're not respecting each other's space. You're trying to invalidate each other. You can't make music. The bass drum and the violin can't make music trying to invalidate each other. And chances are the bass drum would win every time, right? But a bass drum can make people dance, but it can't play a melody.
Yeah.
Right. And the ability to make people dance and play a melody happens if they respect each other's space. That's what rhythm does. Gets you to respect each other's space. Off the instrument, it's respect. Right. Respect makes the other person know that you respect their space and gives you a potential path forward, a.k.a. still making music, not with notes, but now with ideas, opinions, religion, or the lack thereof, whatever it is.
Man, thank you, man. This was so great.
Hey, man, I appreciate it.
That concludes part two of Joseph Wooten, Music, Culture, Rhythm, and Respect. If you want to learn more about Joseph Wooten, check out his discography, his latest music, his shows, you can check out josephwooten.com. And if you're interested in keeping up with the podcast and all the great things that we're doing here on Funktastic Chats, you can go to www.funktasticchats.com. Thank you so much for sticking with us and for supporting the show. You are extraordinary, and we'll see you next week.